What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends, Larry Rifkin and John Kropczyk. And John, you know, we are thought of here in America as being the hardest working people in showbiz or on the planet.
Look at the Kardashians.
Yeah, they're working hard. Lot of businesses and lots of interests. No, but seriously, Americans were told we really love to work and that we should take our example from many in Europe, who take time off in the afternoon, take a little siesta, relax, take off the month of August. And Americans, no, I don't want to use all my vacation time. I want to be seen as a martyr. And I'm so busy.
Well, I think the people who are working are worried about losing their jobs, so they aren't taking their vacation. But then there's the ones that, you know, I think we got both sides of the coin here.
No, but when you go back to the roots of America, hard work and making it by your own ingenuity and pulling yourself up by the bootstraps. And it was always, you know, the farmer in the field from morning till, you know, dusk. And I mean, that is kind of the impression
that
we really love to work. Or if we don't love to work, we feel compelled by our culture to be active and busy all the time.
Well, I think getting to the middle class was a goal for a lot of people. I think, you know, when my parents, that was big. I don't know. I think we're kind of losing that a little bit in the next generations because of the way work has changed.
It has. And, you know, the good thing in all of this is that we're not working as much as we think we are.
That's
and
true.
That Americans are actually working less and that we are actually having some fun aside from working. And it turns out that the average number of hours that we're working are fewer and we're shifting time to leisure activities. And isn't that what a society that is modernized and automated should be able to do?
That is. I tell you, I'm missing out on this.
No, you're not, John.
No,
you're
like
in the yard a lot. You're playing with the podcast.
With the dogs.
Making no money. So this can't be considered work, John, because isn't work something you get compensated for?
Oh, yeah. That's right.
Oh, that's the only difference. Well, we are bringing to you today on America Trends a man who has been working very hard over a long period of time, Jeffrey Godbey, to explain how it is that we use our time here in America. And time usually is very important. Everybody's got a watch, even though we also have a smartphone.
Yes.
We're always looking at the clock.
We're constantly reminded about time.
Yeah, exactly. And he wrote a book along with John Robinson called Time for Life, The Surprising Ways Americans Use Their Time. And I thought this would be really fascinating to look at the trend as it relates to how much time is spent at work, how much doing leisure activity, and maybe we should waste a little more time than we do.
I think we should, but does it also tell you how much leisure time is done at work?
Well, now that's an interesting question, John, because we are told that somebody who's looking very busy and very officious sitting at that computer is probably playing the latest computer game that they bought. So we know that work and leisure are somehow commingled in America today. Well, let's look at how we spend our time. And I hope that you're enjoying spending time with America Trends. We're always trying to bring you important information. And this is going to be an interesting podcast. And put yourself in the context of how much time you're spending at work and how much doing the things you love. Well, on the line with us is Dr. Jeffrey Godbey, and professor emeritus, I believe now, of leisure studies at Penn State's College of Health and Human Development. And you've spent a whole career looking at the way that we spend our time at work, at play, at home. That seems fascinating to me.
Well, sometimes how people spend their time tells you stories that nothing else really will tell you. It's kind of a litmus test of what's American life really like.
And what does the research really tell us about ourselves? Can it tell us that we're just anal retentive and working too much, or that we actually are squandering time? What can you tell us about ourselves?
You know, Americans like to think that our whole lives are based around work. We do work a little bit more than European countries, but not too much. The main issue with us is that most of our free time, which probably averages maybe 37 hours a week for men, maybe 35, 4 for women, depending on the study, is that most of our free time comes on weekdays, and it comes in small chunks. We don't get the big periods away from work that the French, the Germans, the English, you know, do.
Mm-hmm.
And when you add up all of our little chunks of non-work time, it's a lot, 37 hours a week maybe, but most of it's used for looking at screens. And part of the reason for that is the way that it comes to us. You know, if it comes in chunks of an hour and a half, 45 minutes, 3 hours, and you don't take your boat to the lake, you know, in 3 hours. You know, you watch reruns of The Big Bang Theory, or you watch, you know, you do something that's immediately accessible.
Well, you talking to Americans, looking at a lot of data and doing your own research, aren't we all about the notion, as you say, of working and being busy, that everybody has to impress everyone else? Oh, I'm so busy. I don't have time to do this, that, and the other. And somehow we think that's a national ethic. Do you put any value on that? I mean, do you ascribe any good or bad attribute to a country that always wants to impress one another, suggesting that I'm busier than you are?
You know, the amazing thing is that we've gone 180 degrees from the old robber baron rich folks, because for them, it was a sign of success that you didn't have to work. I have people to do that for me. You know, I'm going to Acapulco. I'm, you know, going to the Hamptons. I'm, you know, I have free time and you don't, sucker, you know, and the resources to show off during that free time. And we've now gone to the kind of other extreme where people rate their status on how busy they are and how much they work. And it's a kind of pecking order, who's busier. And so if you say to someone who says, okay, look, can I need to phone you or text you or something about this, and when are you available? And you say, anytime next week, you know, anytime. It's like, oh, boy.
Oh, you know, boy, this person. Oh, yeah. Why do I want to talk to them?
Yeah. You know, so it's really reversed itself, and being busy right now is a badge of honor with Americans. And if you simply ask them questions, not time diaries, but you ask them questions, how long do you work every week, they will exaggerate, you know, and overestimate hours of work quite a bit, and that's just the way it is.
And by the way, that's not even counting all of the vacant time within the context of a work day when they're not really working either.
Yeah, and it's difficult to get people to say, okay, you're at work, what are you doing? And the answer is, I'm checking Vanguard to see how my stocks are doing, or, you know, I'm looking at nude pictures of Bubbles Laverne, you know, because for good reasons. You know, there are things people will not tell you about time use, except for college students. They'll tell you anything.
Oh, really? They're the most honest of all of us?
They are, sometimes to a fault, but in most of the big time diary studies, it's understood that things like drug use and sexual behavior, you know, you're not going to get... you know, highly accurate reports. But on most things with time diaries, like the study that's just come out, you get pretty accurate information because people reconstruct their day. I got up at 6 a.m., you know.
Mm-hmm.
I had an egg on, cooked an egg on toast. I went online and looked at, you know, and so people began to reconstruct their days in ways that really tell us how everyday life unfolds.
So this is the way the studies that we read are constructed, that people have to actually write it down. It's like a radio diary where you have to write down every quarter hour what you're listening to. So we can trust some of these figures, I assume, and they're telling us that Americans are working less, and here's what they're doing instead. So you believe that we are actually working less and have been over the years.
There's a great consistency in how much, you know, we work, and a great consistency in how we spend our time. You know, quote, full-time workers, which is, you know, these are terms that are really obsolete, but might work 42 hours a week, but lots of people work part-time. And so it's more complex than it used to be because there are people with multiple jobs. There are people who have a job that they don't report to.
Yes.
So, you know, there's a big gray economy where people don't report work. What you can say is the idea that Americans don't have any leisure is simply false. On a given day, 95% of Americans have some free time.
So when we look at the economy today, where so many people are freelancers, independent agents, calling their own shots, many of them doing it purposely so they can work out of their home and perhaps help out with various chores around the house at the same time, is that a growing part of the population and a reason that we may be?
The higher your income level, the higher your education, the more likely you are to do some work at home. And people are doing increasing amounts of work at home. And all the old divisions of time use have really come apart. For example, Americans have more free time on weekdays than they do on the weekend.
Hmm.
You remember the song, Everybody's Working for the Weekend. But it happens, more of our free time occurs on weekdays. What are you doing? It's 1 in the afternoon on Wednesday. I'm at the gym. What are you doing at 8 o'clock on Thursday? I'm watching reruns of Wimbledon. And what are you doing Saturday morning? Laundry.
Yeah, yeah.
So the weekday-weekend dichotomy has really come apart.
Interesting. You tell us, of course, or at least this report does, and I'm sure you'll reinforce, that the American workforce also is undergoing another dramatic change, and that's demographically. So there are a lot of us in our 60s now, and we're working a bit, we're consulting, we're volunteering, we're doing a whole range of things, but we're controlling our schedule much more than we have in the past. And like that gentleman in the robber baron days, we're able to say, let our money work for us rather than us working now strictly for our money.
All the old statuses from the 70s and 80s, you know, are you a full-time worker? Everything that was on a Census Bureau in the 70s and 80s has changed, you know, are you white or, you know, African-American or whatever? And, you know, all these absolute categories make less and less sense. What is a full-time worker? Is that a derivatives trader who's working 60 hours a week and making a bazillion dollars? Is that a 9-to-5-er? And there are still some 9-to-5-ers, and that's 9-to-5 workers usually are 35 hours a week. And then when you look at how long they actually work, it varies a lot. People with two jobs, people with temporary jobs, you know, women who stop work to have a child, you know, all the old industrial society categories are gone. And, of course, manufacturing produced all these absolute categories. And in the U.S. right now, there's various estimates. My guess is that maybe 12%, 11% of workers are in manufacturing.
Interesting, and it was a much higher percentage before. Americans who are 15 and older spend an average of 3 hours and 14 minutes working each day last year, compared with 3 hours and 28 minutes in 2007. And those who did the American Time Use Survey say that includes all Americans, including those in college, underemployed, unemployed, and retired, because somebody looking at that number would say, wow, that seems like a very small amount every day. But we also hear that number of 90 million Americans who are not in the workforce on a daily basis. Put all of that together for us.
There are more categories, and when I was young, quote young, you could earn enough money as a teenager to make a significant dent in whatever you're going to do next. And now, work part-time at Walmart, and you make $8 an hour, and you want to go to the university, and it's $60,000 a year. And, you know, the relative financial reward for working for some people is so small. The U.S. has the largest rich-poor gap of any modern nation, as you know. Mm. And so for some people, it doesn't make sense. It makes more sense if you're motivated to study than to get a part-time job at McDonald's. And teenagers from the 60s through the 80s, or from the 50s through the 80s, 90s, worked a lot of part-time jobs, and they still do. The gap in what that will get you has increased, and it results in many teenagers not working.
Do they want more hours to compensate for the fact that the wages in some of these industries are so low and they can't find it? Or is it that many of these employers don't want them on any full-time basis for reasons of benefits and the like?
That's a good question. And, you know, the millennials are a much maligned generation. And I don't think there's a simple answer to that. But what there is a pretty, you know, definitive answer is that all the old notions of you first go to school, you then do this, you know, the life stages that occur
order,
one at a
yes.
time,
mm-hmm.
and that's all gone. I mean, half the 70-year-olds I talk to are dating, you know. I'm not joking.
No, I understand. Well, we'll talk about that, but Americans between 35 and 44 are on average working 5 hours and 13 minutes each day. Now, I go back to the fact that the average is 3 hours and 14 minutes working each day last year. So what's going on with this group, the 35 to 44? I think they may be Gen Xers. Why are they working so much more than the rest of us?
You know, marriage, if it occurs at all in this culture, occurs much later, late 20s for males and females. And childbirth also occurs much later, with the exception of poor people. Nothing changes time use like marriage and child. Even cohabiting, whether or not they're married, changes time use dramatically. For females, it means their participation in housework increases. For males, it means their participation in paid work, and now females as well, increases. And, you know, a routine is established, and if you add a child to that, then free time declines, routine intensifies, work hours. People want to invest in something who have a child, try to buy a condo or an apartment or a house or start that process. So they want to work longer hours and often are able to.
You took me back there for a moment. Thank you. I remember those days very clearly. So how are Americans spending their time if they're not working as much? Basically, if I'm reading this report correctly, they're watching a lot more television, streaming online or otherwise, and they're sleeping a lot more too, even though we understand we have a problem getting to sleep often.
There's a lot of phony conceptions about American life, and and the idea that everyone is rushing and that they never sleep. And the average American sleeps over 8 hours. And, of course, our population is getting older, and older people watch more TV. They participate less in most sports, although they may do workout and fitness-related activity more than other groups. But by and large, older people are TV viewers. And television revolutionized time use in the U.S. It organized what was going to be done in the evening on weekdays. And that's still true. And even while there's a lot of talk about streaming and this and that, the average American household has almost three TVs in it.
So everybody's watching their own, but they're still watching somewhere in the house. I mean, when you do go by houses at night, it's a really fascinating study that I'm sure someone like yourself must have done many times, and that is to see that glimmering light and whether there's any eyeball still fixated on it or whether they're sleeping or not. So maybe they're combining two of those things that we just talked about, watching TV and sleeping.
TV viewing from about the 70s forward has increasingly become secondary activity. So a lot of these diary studies don't include what else are you doing, but if you ask what else, I'm watching TV, I'm eating popcorn, I'm watching TV, I'm looking at my cell phone, you know, I'm watching TV, I'm eating dinner, I'm watching, you know.
So we're doing them in combination.
Yeah. So then the question becomes, what's really uppermost? What's a person really, if the TV is on and they're, you know, reading the newspaper, what are they really doing? Mm-hmm. And so TV's become kind of accompanying activity, just as cell phone on. Most people don't turn on a cell phone as a special occasion. I'm now going to use my phone. It's on. So the TV and cell phone are both, you know, in some sense, kind of accompanying activity that interrupts and is interruptible. Doing one thing at a time, the study that's just come out, it's difficult to capture secondary and tertiary activity, but over the last 50 years in the U.S., doing one thing at a time is increasingly obsolete, and people are, my guess is while you're talking to me, you're reading a screen. I don't know that. But
well, actually, I'm not. Well,
okay,
I might have looked at one screen, but I'm not really focused on it. It's a complementary activity. But let me ask you this about computer games, because we are finding that they are grabbing more time among younger Americans. And these young adults, 15 to 19, spend about an hour and 3 minutes a day on a computer game. Does a computer game take them more and immerse them more than some of the other activities on a computer? Or is this all, you know, background noise now where they have to have that on just so as not to miss something, but they're actually focused on, well, dare I say, read a book?
That's a difficult question, but historically, you know, teenagers have played various kinds of games with rules and strategies, and whether they were pinball machines or the virtual version of that, most of them actually require concentration. And, you know, I don't think these games are an indication of something terrible about teenagers, because teenagers have always played some kind of games that were skill challenge based diversion, but also had a learning curve and could be made more complex as your skill level increased. And so I don't think it's anything new. I think the format is you can hold it in your hand instead of putting nickels into it or some other format.
But you noticed this kind of trend years ago. Time for Life, your book, The Surprising Ways Americans Use Their Time, going back to the late 1990s. And you said that Americans argue that Americans' sense of time famine stems from their increased emphasis on the consumption of experiences and from the phenomenon of time deepening, doing more and doing things more quickly and simultaneously. So you saw this way back in the 90s.
I think there was evidence of it, and I think now it's mainstream. It's normal for people to, you know, to say things like, well, how much time do you, you know, I want to talk to you about this. How much time do you have, you know, instead of just saying, I want to talk to you about this. And it's a kind of currency, particularly for people who really have enough money. And that's a lot of people in the U.S. And time is a bigger constraint than money for many people in the U.S. You know, it's a valued resource. It is spent, saved, invested. And children are told, after all the time I've spent on you, you know, you would go and do that. You know, it's really a currency for privileged people. You can see the speed up in response to that. Even tennis just has started. The U.S. Open for the first time was going to have a, I think it's a 20-second rule about how long you can wait between the first and second serves. You know, football is sped up. Basketball is sped up. Most sports have sped up. Most books have declined in the number of words in them. Most magazines. Look at Harper's, one of our best, in my mind, one of our best magazines. I mean, Harper's, it's a luxury. They have one or two long, quote, long articles, but newspapers have cut back, you know, the number of words, and things have been, restaurants, waitresses show up the first time to see you and say, can I put your, you know, what would you like? You know.
But you reminded us years ago that, in fact, as we look at it, time is not a very important indicator of productivity. I mean, I think we equate one with the other.
There's a bunch of evidence that, with the exception of slave labor, if someone is, how many widgets can you drive into a, you know, into a table or something, that for a whole lot of work, time spent is not a very good indicator of what what gets done. And a lot of captains of industry have come to that conclusion. But it's a problem that no one, well, actually, a lot of the Silicon Valley companies, I think, are coming to the conclusion that people don't have a little time to play, and if the number of hours they work is not going to produce the best software and is not going to produce the innovations that are needed. And with privileged work, I think it's well understood that hours don't translate into productivity.
So what are they finding, and what would you say? Are there these bursts of creativity where, whether you spend 5 hours on a task or you spend 2 hours on it, it's that burst of creativity that is really going to define your effectiveness or your accomplishment?
Yeah, I think what you're saying is absolutely true, and creativity can't really be pushed. All right, 1, 2, 3, be creative or I'll fire you, you know. And it has to be allowed to happen. The culture we're in often wants to make things happen, and some things can't be made to happen. They have to be allowed to happen, and art has to be allowed to happen, and, you know, and creativity is really the highest order job skill in the world right now. I spent a lot of time in China, and even that's their big worry, is to what extent are they creative. That indicates that hours of work are generally not an indicator of what's accomplished. You know, we don't always believe that, but I think that's the case.
What about consumption of our work or our art?
how does that affect the time that people might spend on it? For example, if nobody wanted to listen to music anymore, would people still create music, or do you do it because of something innate, intrinsic in yourself? I say this because reading is now losing popularity with younger Americans. We read in the same time use study. The biggest readers are those over 75 who spend about 51 minutes a day. Millennials aren't picking up the habit. So what does that portend for reading in our country?
Since the 1990s, I think Alvin Toffler was one of the first people who talked about, you know, post-literate culture. And to me, it's a kind of strange situation because reading can mean different things. And guess what people do on computers? That's all, or cell phones. That's all they do is read. They might look at pictures 1/20th of the time, but most of what they read is crap. You know, they read something written by people who don't really know a lot, and the articles, an Expedia article might be three paragraphs. So in one sense, this study, when they talk about reading, they're not talking about computers. They're talking about books, magazines, and newspapers. The fact that reading in detail, reading a 500-page book, that type of reading, reading the Iliad, reading the entire Bible through, you know, reading...
Well, that's why libraries are doing so many other things aside from encouraging people to read these days.
Yeah.
Dr. Jeffrey Godby is with us. In closing, you've been studying this issue of time use by Americans for such a long period of time. What do you think today? I mean, if we go back to your work 30 years ago and looked at it and today, what surprises you the most?
What surprises me the most is with only one or two exceptions, there's a great consistency on how people use their time and how long they sleep. And the press likes to exaggerate small changes. No one's sleeping anymore. Sorry, they are 8.5 hours average, maybe is slightly more. What surprises me is the extent to which male and female time use patterns look similar. That's the revolution that's taken place. They're not the same. Women have almost an hour less free time a day, maybe 45 minutes less a day, but the entry into the labor force, I mean, in some measures, women are the majority of the labor force. Male and female time patterns have come closer and closer and closer. Sport participation, tourism participation, not equal, and I don't think we'll see equal. There's no equality in nature. Huge change in male and female time use patterns, moving toward very similar patterns.
So they're not doing 2/3 of the housework any longer, or 4/5 of the child care, as you saw back in the 90s?
Well, they are doing 60% of housework. And if women make more money than men and they're cohabiting, men often do as much of the housework. It really is income-dependent.
Well, they should, to earn their keep, of course.
It is income-dependent. And, of course, yes. Most people in the U.S. don't live in families. And so, you know, the male-female equation has undergone a revolution in terms of time use, and I think that will continue to evolve.
Interesting. Well, American society, by many accounts, and time usage, a little bit shook up in terms of where we've been and where we are and where we're going. Very interesting. I thank you so much for being with us today and sharing this information with us and your many years of research on the topic. Jeffrey Godby, here on America Trends.
Thank you.